From the outside, you can see we're just your average family. Sure, we're a little disorganized.
Is it the garbage truck?
What time is it? Ugh. Mike, did you take out the trash?
It's Axel's turn.
Trash day! Bring out the trash!
Come on, guys, move! Trash truck's a block away!
Okay. I know it probably looks a little insane to be so nuts about trash day, but see, due to recent cutbacks, trash pickup only happens once every 2 weeks. If you miss it, you're screwed.
We're never gonna make it!
What are you doing under there?
I'm tired of sleeping with Axel. His bed's always squeaking. I want my own room.
How long have you been sleeping under there?
A month.
All right, whatever. Just get rid of your trash. No, I don't understand why nobody obeys the chore chart. Axel was supposed to take out the garbage. Sue was supposed to clean up last night. And why do we even bother making a chore chart if nobody pays any attention to it?
There's nothing on it!
Yeah, because I haven't bought the dry erase markers yet. But it's all up here, and you're supposed to remember what I told you. I swear I spend my whole life cleaning up other people's crap.
Ow.
Oh, hi. I'm sorry. Are you all right?
Hey, guys, the truck's passing the Donahue's.
Mom hit me with a beer bottle.
What?
Rick, don't tell people that. It sounds horrible. No, I was tossing it to Sue and Brick got in the way. Let me see that. No, you're fine.
He's all right?
Yeah, barely even a scratch. It's not bleeding or anything. I'm sorry, honey.
Darn, but I wanted a Band-Aid. Can I put a Band-Aid on it anyway? I want to use the new Super Mario ones.
Super Mario.
Okay, that's fine, honey. Mike, come on! We can do this! We can do this! Hurry up! We did it! We made it!
The day started off lousy, and then it got weird.
Frankie, you have a call on line one. Your son Brick's school is on line one.
Well, I'm working too. Besides, it's your turn. I went down to school when Axel pants the band kids.
I did Sue and the squirrel attack.
Brick and the chalk chewing.
Brick and the lying down in class. Brick and the beeping in class. Brick and the howling in class. Brick and the...
Hi, I'm Brick X Dad. What do you do this time? We get his lunch. We're in kind of a hurry this morning. What's going on here?
You tell me. I hear your wife got a little rough with your son this morning.
What? Are you joking? You guys strippers or something?
No, I'm afraid not. We got a call from the hall monitor. He said that your son told him that his mother hit him with a beer bottle.
Hi, Dad.
Guys, this is all a huge misunderstanding. It was an accident.
Relax, Mr. Heck. Just stay calm. When parents are stressed, lapses in judgment can occur.
Tell me about it. We should never have let Brick anywhere near the first aid kit.
It's tiny. There's not even a scratch. Here, Brick, unwrap and show him.
Sir,
we can't allow you to talk directly to your son.
What? Is this for real?
Oh, it was for real, all right. It started with the bandage and then just snowballed from there. It didn't help that there was a new hall monitor at school.
Hey, buddy. What happened to your arm?
I'm not supposed to tell.
What do you mean?
My mom says I'm not supposed to tell.
Well, if something happened at home, you have to tell a grown-up.
Okay. My mom hit me with a beer bottle. She was mad, my dad was mad, and I always get in the way.
You can see how this sounded. Everyone could see how it sounded, except Brick.
Hey, good morning. Great to see you this morning. My name's Kurt. I'm the pastor at Cross Point. And you know, we're going to be talking about this and some of the things that relate to what we just saw. I'm really excited that you're here with us today as we begin this new four-week series called Live More. And over the next 4 weeks, we're going to be talking about things that I really think are very applicable and very appropriate to every single one of our lives. We're going to be talking about what it means to do this. Just go, have a little bit of breathing room, a little bit of margin, a little bit of space. And that's really something that's difficult for us. You know, when I was growing up, we had these unintentional traditions that happened in our home, and one of them happened around the holidays, just after the holidays, every year. It happened up in our bonus room, kind of this room above our garage, had an attic on either side of it, and my dad would go up during the holidays, and he would begin to clean out the bonus room. He'd take out, like, garbage bags, and, you know, and most of it happened while my mom and us kids were sleeping. You know, he'd kind of go stealth under the radar, and, you know, and he'd begin organizing the entire room. He'd begin labeling things. This is like before label makers existed, all right? And, you know, and everything kind of got you know, put in its place and organized, and the Christmas stuff was here, and our racetrack pieces here, and the blocks, and the cars, and, you know, the tools, and the paint, and I mean, you know, all the school papers that came home got organized in a box for each of us kids, and this would just kind of go on, and he put things in bags that you couldn't see. He was very, 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 like, smart on that front, you know? So we didn't know what he was taking to the trash can. You know, when I do this with my kids, they go out and, like, take it all back out because they can see what I'm throwing away. He'd take it all out this way, and then after he got it all done, he'd do a reveal. Now, this was the day before there were reveals really, like, were an official thing, right? And so he'd take us all in, and he'd walk us through the room, and he'd kind of talk about how, you know, everything has a place. And I know some of you, you're liking my dad more right now, aren't you? You're like, oh, this is great. I love your dad. He would walk us through, and he'd talk about how everything has a place, and he'd point out, you know, here's where the cars go, and here's where, you know, the track goes, and here's where the empty paint cans go and the tools. And, I mean, he just walks through this whole process, and, you know, as we got through the process at the end of this, you know, it was, like, beautiful. I mean, for some people, it would be godly. I mean, this is like a spiritual moment because everything was in its place and nothing's out of order and everything's organized and, you know, everybody just kind of liked it. And so as the tradition went, everything's organized and everything's in its place. The clutter is gone. Then on January 1st, you know, we would kind of, my mom and us kids, we kind of begin to unravel everything that he did. You know, we'd begin to bring stuff back in and the clutter came back and we didn't, you know, my mom didn't really like to throw things away because they're keepsakes. And, you know, for us kids, we're just careless. We could care less, you know, what went in the bonus room. You just throw it in there. And, you know, and the rest of the year, the junk came back into the room. And you know, it's like you come home from school with a big school project. You're like, where do you want me to put this? Well, take it to the bonus room. So you put it in the bonus room. And, you know, you're cleaning your room out. And you're like, well, I don't have any room for these toys. What should I do with them? We'll take them to the bonus room. So, I mean, piece by piece. And you know, my mom was like okay with that. She doesn't mind stuff around. I don't know why God makes everybody different, but it's not like right or wrong to be one way or the other. Us kids were you know, kind of careless. But, you know, from January 1st on, we continued this cycle where it was a mess again. And then at the end of the year, we go through the tradition again. Now, in my mom's and our defense as kids, all right, and some of you are like, you don't need a defense, all right? There's no defense for that. There's not anything that would make that appropriate. You know, my mom's an artist, all right? She, like, thinks creatively, and she likes, you know, she didn't mind stuff around. And us kids, we really couldn't care. But, you know, and I'm not going to ask you to raise your hand on which person you are, okay? I mean, your spouse is probably nudging you. And some of you might even be embarrassed because I maybe put a little bit of a negative spin on this. But, you know, some of you are minimalists. Some of you are like, you know, less is more. You know, you say things like, have you noticed how God, you know, put the universe into place? Have you noticed the space between the planets? I mean, there is like a margin between everything God created. And so, you know, here's the deal. It's there's nothing wrong for your basement or your bonus room or the trunk of your car or the front seat of your car to look, you know, kind of like this right here. Now, I know for some of you, I just ruined your day. You're good until this moment. Others of you are just going, what? There's nothing wrong with that. You know, there's nothing wrong with your trunk to look like this. There's nothing wrong with your bonus room or your loft or your basement or your attic to look like this. I don't know why God made us all different. I mean, there's nothing wrong if you like it this way. For me, I kind of like things cleaned up. Like if I'm cooking, I love to cook. If I'm in the kitchen, I got to clean everything up, put the dishes away, dirty dishes out of the sink before I can begin. Not everybody's that way. Some people are fine working in this right here. You know, but, and so, you know, and if you don't know what kind of person you are, when you leave here today, here's how you find out. When you walk to your car, just imagine somebody's going to go home with you. If you have to move something out of a seat for them to like get in your car, you can kind of figure it out. All right. So the point is that, you know, if your car looks like this, or your trunk, or your bedroom, or your attic, or your bonus room, you know, here's what we're going to talk about over the next 4 weeks. You know, that's fine. But when your life looks like this, this gets problematic. When your schedule looks like this, this is problematic. When your relationships, and relationships are all about efficiency, just getting through them because they can't cram any more in, this becomes a problem. When financially we look like this, you know, if I have one little hiccup, there's no room for error, then this becomes problematic. And so we're going to take a look at this. You know, when our kids' schedules begin to look like this, when the hundreds of things we're shipping them off to and they can't even enjoy the things that they have because their lives look like this, you've always got them going to something, this becomes problematic. All right, now don't discount me yet. I know what some of you are thinking. You're like, Kurt, you don't know my boss. You don't understand, you know, my job, or you know, I don't have a choice in this. Or this, here's my line. It's just a season I'm in right now. I will eventually get out of this season. See, you know, we have all of these reasons that we push back. But at the end of the day, when our schedule looks like this, when our life looks like this, when our relationships look like this, when our finances look like this, and there's just no room to go, there's no margin, this becomes very problematic. And so we're going to discover how God has something to say about this over the next 4 weeks. And it's kind of funny. I mean, we can laugh about this, right? I mean, it's kind of funny if your back seat looks like this and you're nudging each other. But here's what's not funny. It's not funny to watch a husband and wife who have absolutely no room in their schedule, and so it creates relational problems when their lives look like this. It's no fun. It's no fun when you see a mom and a dad shuffling their kids off to just every activity that they can possibly be in, and they lose relationship with their kids because all they are is a taxi service. It's no fun to watch that. It's no fun to watch a couple who's maxed out every single dollar and then some to such a point that any little bump financially in the road creates major relational strife. That is no fun at all. And so, you know, here's what we're going to be discovering. We're going to be discovering that life is better with margin. And for the sake of the next 4 weeks, we're going to define margin as this. Margin is the space between our current pace and our limits. All right, it's the space between, it's the distance between our current financial situation and our limits, our current relational situation, our relationships and our limits. It's the space or the distance between our current schedule and our limits. That's what margin is. And here's the thing, because I know some of you are going to push back on this. You're already pushing back. You're already discounting. You're like, Kurt, you have no idea. You've never worked my job. You don't know what it's like to be in my industry. You know, but here's something that's a reality. We all have limits. Every single one of us have limits. You have a limit in your relationships. You can redline in your relationships. You can redline financially. You can redline when it comes to your schedule. You can cram so much in that nothing ever gets value because there's so much. And once we begin to redline in these areas, what begins to happen is instead of living more, we actually live less. In our pursuit to want to live more, we actually find ourselves enjoying life less. So, you know, a couple things, and you know these things. I kind of want to lay them out as we just kind of lay some foundation for this. You know these things, but a couple things that happen when we begin to live at the limit. The first thing is that you experience a lot of stress. All right, I mean, just as that scene showed a few moments ago, I mean, you know, that police officer said, man, parents do crazy things when there's stress going on. I mean, when there's no limits, when we're living at the edge all the time, you know, the filters at which we make decisions through, I just get thrown out the window. And one of the other things that doctors are actually learning, scientists are learning, is that adrenaline is what happens when we're stressed. When we're stressed, we live off adrenaline on a regular basis. And when we do this, adrenaline actually becomes a landing pad for things like sickness and illness and tumors and cancer. I mean, so it doesn't just impact the quality of our life, but literally our physical life. Another thing that happens when there's no margin is you begin to lose focus. You become very, very myopic. When you're constantly living on the edge, when you're constantly, you know, right at the limit, you lose sight of where you're going. In fact, this stage is a great example of this. You know, as long as I'm like 4 or 5 feet away from the edge of the stage, I don't even know it's there. I don't pay attention to it. I can look at you. I can make contact. But the closer I get to the edge right here, and those of you in the front get a little nervous when I'm standing over you. When I begin to get right on the edge, my vision even goes like this, because I now have to pay attention because I'm right there. And I lose sight. I get distracted on the things in front of me, which are usually the things in life that matter the most. And so when we step back, we actually are capable of focusing on those things. The third thing that happens is your relationships begin to suffer. You know, mom's always on the phone. Dad's always in front of his computer. You know, they're always fighting about money. You know, I don't even, like, come home after work because, you know, when I come home, you know, she doesn't even connect with me. Or, well, you know, I'd rather stay at work because when he's home, he's so focused on his work, it's like there's nothing there that I come home to. You know, and every time a scheduling issue comes up, somebody just locks up. Every time a financial issue comes up, somebody just locks up. And listen, you get this. We get this. I don't have to explain this to us. We live this all the time. And it's not a Christian thing. It's not a religious thing. This is like a life thing. This is a thing. And so it brings us to the question, why do we do this? I mean, why do we live in this way? And you don't have to like my answer. I'm going to give you an answer. One of the things I would suggest that is one of the reasons we do this. You don't have to like it and come up with your own if you want. But, you know, when it comes to why do we do this? Because we have all the reasons why we kick back on this and we're like, oh, man, my life is this way. You know, life is just at a different pace than it used to be. I don't have a choice in this. If I had a different job, you know, it's just a season that I'm in. See, these are all my excuses. This is a regular tension I find myself in. And that's probably part of it. If some of us got really vulnerable, we might say, well, you know, part of the reason my life looks like this is because I have no discipline. And that's probably a part of it as well. But I think there's something bigger going on. I think there's a driver that actually really causes us to live this way where we cram our lives fuller and fuller with more and more stuff, spending more, jamming more in. And again, we have to be willing to look at it. Some of us are going to push back on this. You're going to be like, no, this is not the factor. But if we want to make a change, I really think we can make a change on this if we're open to what it might be. And here's what it is. I think one of the biggest things that drives our lack of margin in our schedules, our relationships, and our finances is fear. It's fear. We're fearing something. And you're like, oh, I don't fear anything. It's not fear. Well, just turn it around a little bit. My question to you would be then, why don't you gear down? Just pull back a little bit. You know what your response would be? Well, Kurt, if I gear down, I'm afraid I'm not going to advance. Kurt, if I gear my kids down and they're not in every activity, you know, if I tell my daughter she can only play softball but not dance, swimming, you know, gymnastics and judo at the same time, she might not get the scholarship. I'm afraid she's not. I'm afraid. If I don't do this, I'm afraid. See, fear becomes the driving factor. And, you know, it's interesting because, you know, when we get to this point, we actually find ourselves in this place and we don't even know it. And it's actually hard. It's kind of hard to stomach, if we're really honest. I don't like to be driven by fear. And yet I find myself there, you know, in an activity-driven, spending frenzy with relationship-less life. And that's where we find ourselves. And so, I think this is also a man thing, maybe a little more than a woman thing. I think men, you know, even more so the women, are like, well, I want my life to matter. You know, when I leave my current job, I want people to be like, man, now that Kurt's not here, man, we just don't hit on the same, you know, in the same way as we used to. Or, you know, when I'm dead and gone, I want people to be like, man, there's a hole in the world today because Kurt is gone. You know, and so we're driven. We're like, I want to check goals off my list. I want to, you know, get after it. I want to be progressive. And, you know, we have all these reasons. There's nothing wrong with any of that. There's nothing wrong with that. But we're driven by this fear that, man, what if my life doesn't matter? And so we equate busyness, we equate doing things, spending, buying, purchasing, having. We equate all of these things with, does my life really matter? And so, you know, what happens is this fear of not mattering actually drives us again away from the things that matter the most. So today, we have an opportunity. And we have to choose whether we want to begin to make a change. When we begin to make a new trajectory, we have an opportunity to actually begin to live differently, to make some changes. And these are difficult decisions. There are always difficult decisions required when we begin to make a change. And yet I believe that if we're willing to look at some of this stuff, we can make the decision to live more instead of less. So here's what's fascinating. If you're Jewish, if you're Christian, or just if you're anybody, it doesn't really matter if you're any of those things. But, you know, if you're Jewish or Christian, this is really a big deal. You know, in the first pages of the Bible, as soon as you open the Bible up, God speaks right to this issue. Now, if you open up your Bible, it's not going to say margin. It's not going to be in the concordance, this, like, phrase that goes, all right, you're not going to find that anywhere. But what you're going to find is you're going to find this ongoing dialogue that God has with this nation of Israel, this group of people in the Old Testament. And basically, God gives very practical ways on how this margin is to be inserted or observed in life. And then Jesus rolls around, and Jesus gives maybe not so many practical ways, but very pragmatic ways that this is to be, you know, embraced as well. And so we're going to really see this contrast between faith and fear. Because this really comes down to a faith issue. It really comes down to, can I trust God? You see, way, way, way back at the beginning of the Old Testament, there was this group of people called the nation of Israel. They were in bondage to the nation of Egypt. And it's hard for us to fully understand this because these people were slaves. You and I, we don't get what it means to be slaves. This whole group of people, Moses led them out of Egypt into the promised land. And all they knew was slavery. They didn't know anything else. All they knew was working 24-7, 24 hours a day, 7 days a week, actually working about 18 to 20 hours of that period of time. They just knew work, 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 work. And if you were sick, you didn't take a sick day. I mean, if you were sick as a slave, you went to work because they're not going to waste like good medicine on a sick slave. So you got discarded if you didn't show up for work. And so all they knew was slavery. And God leads them out of slavery, and he takes them to the place called the Promised Land, and he gives them then this whole new set of rules to live by. Now, in the Old Testament, we know there's the Ten Commandments. We've at least heard of the Ten Commandments. Some of us know them. Some of us might know a few of them. But see, there are actually way more commandments than the Ten Commandments. There's actually like 600 and some odd laws that God puts into place. And some of us are like, 600 and some laws? I mean, what is he doing? Well, here's the reason why. The reason he's doing this, imagine this. God is actually creating right here a brand new country. He's creating a whole new country with a different set of values, with a different set of beliefs, with a different, you know, way of thinking. And he's basically reforming or renewing the minds of these people who all they knew was slavery. He's like, you're not going to live that way anymore. So as he institutes these laws, he actually builds in margin. He actually builds in breathing room for them to actually have a moment where they don't work 24-7. They can actually go. And one of the big ones that we may have heard before comes in Exodus chapter 20. And it says this, it's called the Sabbath. It says, observe the Sabbath day and keep it holy. And some of us are like, man, I get the Sabbath. Somebody on the way out today are like, man, I was going to sit by the pool today. So you just allowed me to do that without feeling guilty. See, we get the Sabbath, right? I mean, as Americans, we're like, I'm entitled to a Sabbath. I get two Sabbath days. I get Saturday and Sunday off every week. I mean, that's just the American way. See, we get this. The people of this day, they didn't get it. They never. This is like a foreign concept to them. This was like, it was dangerous for them. This is like pre-refrigeration. This is before they could store their food up and actually, you know, eat it the next day and it still be good. Understand this nation, all they knew was work, 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 work. It's all they'd ever known. And God comes to them and he's like, you know, here's what you're going to do. One of my top 10 rules for you. You shalteth, taketh, a dayeth, offeth. That's what he says. You shalteth, taketh, a dayeth, offeth. Now, and who doesn't love a God that says that, right? I mean, a God that says, hey, take a day. Enjoy a day just for you. Just a day where you don't work at all. And see, this is crazy. This was staggering to them. This was a whole new concept to them. Nobody could take a day off. I mean, they had to eat. They had to prepare their food that morning. They couldn't even do that. And they're like, well, what's going to happen? We're not going to eat. And God's like, no, it's a law. I want you to take a full day off. So see, then, by the time Jesus rolls around, the Pharisees, they've like turned this thing upside down, and they put all these unhealthy principles around the Sabbath day. And in ancient Israel, the Sabbath basically was when the sun went down Friday till the sun went down the next day, Saturday, and you didn't begin work until the sun came up the next morning. And so whatever you didn't get done, Friday night when the sun went down, it waited. You know, whatever crops were left in the field, they stayed there. It was actually against the law to work. It was a day where everybody would just go. And why do you think God would do this? I mean, part of it is because God designed us this way. But the main principle behind this is they had to trust him. Like, well, God, what about, we're not going to eat. How are we going to get the food when it's our Sabbath day? You got to trust me. Well, what about the crops that didn't get into the barn before the rain? You got to trust me. What about the work that's still left to do? What about, you've got to trust me. See what God is saying? He's saying that this is a faith issue. This is a trust issue. And see, when Jesus came around, he said something else really interesting. In fact, here's what he said. He said, the Sabbath was made for man, not man for the Sabbath. So he's basically saying, hey, the Sabbath was created for people, for mankind. This was a gift that God gave to us. And I tell you what, I can very clearly, I can look back over the 17 years I've been in my working life, in ministry, and I can tell you very clearly, the first pastor that was my boss, drilled this into me. He said, Kurt, you will have a Sabbath day. You will have a day off. My day off has always been Fridays. That's a day where I try to rid myself of work. Doesn't always happen. And what I can tell you, 17 years of this, the best seasons of my life looking back are the seasons when I was fully trusting God, taking a day off, doing no work, and life was so much better. And I can tell you some of the worst seasons in my life are the seasons when I look back and I just work. You know, oh man, this person needs me to call them. This needs follow-up. This project, the lending, this, that, you know, it's not going to get done. And I'd work right through the Sabbath. I can tell you those are days where I had the least faith and I lived less. I mean, it's amazing. So God builds margin into this community. There's another way he builds it in. Another way he builds margin into this early community is through something called the tithe. And we're not going to be talking about giving. You can wipe the sweat off your brow. All right, we did that a couple months ago. That's a really important thing. But we're going to talk about what it means to build margin through our finances. See, back in this particular day, the Hebrew culture didn't have banks. They didn't like go deposit their money somewhere. They kept it in their homes. And so the Hebrew home, they actually would store what they were giving to God, 10%, a tithe. They would store that in a box, probably kind of like the Joy Box. Or they'd put it in a jar, and it'd be right in the center of the home. And so this was what was going to the synagogue, to the church, to further the work that God is doing in the community. God built this in as a command. And so they would store this money in this box, and every Hebrew family knows that we can't live on everything we bring in. So 10%, sometimes 20% of what we bring in actually goes into the jar, goes into the box to invest in God's work, to invest in caring for the poor, serving those in needs. So they visibly saw the money come in, and then they would say, this is something, though, we're setting aside that we won't or can't and didn't spend. It was like a built-in way of just saying, even in your finances, there needs to be margin. Just because it comes in doesn't mean it needs to go out. The third thing we see, and this is probably one that's a little less familiar to some of us, it's called the law of gleaning. And the law of gleaning was really interesting because, you know, remember, this is a brand new society. So God's establishing this group of people, this new country, exactly the way he wants it. And so here's what he says. I want to read you a couple passages from the Old Testament. And remember, this is like a hand-to-mouth culture. This is like a, you know, I don't have refrigeration. I can't prepare my food 2 days ago and eat it today. It's like I prepare it, I harvest it, and I eat it. And so if you're a farmer, this is how you survive. This is an agrarian culture. Everyone survived off the land. And so, you know, you only had a farm as big as you could farm. You know, your family farmed your land, so it's not like you'd have some massive farm because you as a family had to take care of it. And so here's how God instituted this ancient law into the Hebrew people. He said, when you reap the harvest of your land, do not reap to the very edges of your field or gather the gleanings of your harvest. Now, the word gleanings, a gleaning was actually the fruit that had fallen off the vine. The grapes, the mangoes, whatever it might be, it had actually fallen off the vine. And it was on the ground. And so he says, when you, the gleanings, the things that have actually fallen to the ground, don't pick those up. Even though they're good to eat, even though they're still good, and you could eat them, don't pick them up. And also, don't go right up to the edges of your field. Leave a little on the edges. And then he says this. He says, also do not go over your vineyard a second time or pick up the grapes that have fallen. Leave them for the poor and for the foreigner. Once again, he says, when you go through your grape vineyard, don't pick the stuff up that's already fallen to the ground. Don't go all the way to the edges and don't go over it again. But they're like, but what if? Well, you know, why can't I go to the edges? He's like, no, don't go to the edges. They're like, but. It's like money left on the table. I mean, it's like, this is like my livelihood just sitting in the field. And he's like, no, don't go to the edges. Don't go over it a second time. Leave it for those who have less. You need to leave a little on the edges. It's a margin. It's a margin. And then he ends this thing. Look at how he ends this thing. He ends it saying, I am the Lord your God. It's like, thank you, but did we change the subject here or something? I mean, what? Like, what are we talking about? Is this like a new paragraph right here? No, you know what he's saying right here? You know what God's saying? What God's saying is, I want you to trust me. I am the Lord your God. Remember, I'm the Lord your God. You got to trust me on this. See, here's the principle right here. I don't want you to take everything to the limit. I want there to be space. Space. I want there to be a moment, a place where you can actually go, and in that space, you have to trust me. And then to make matters worse, Jesus rolls around again. And Jesus, yeah, I'm going to warn you, sometimes when Jesus talks, like, it just infuriates me. I mean, I read this stuff, and I'm like, Jesus, you don't understand what it's like to live in the 21st century. Jesus, back in that day, I mean, you had, you know, you guys, you could sit around, drink coffee all day, and, you know, you don't understand what my boss, I don't have a boss anymore, you don't understand what it's like to be driven by somebody that, you know, and so, you know, And that's what we say often. I'm like, man, Kurt, you don't understand my industry. You don't understand what it means to be on the sales field. You don't understand, you know, my schedule, what it's like to have, you know, 3 kids. Actually, I do. I have 4 kids. You don't understand what it's like to live in the world and the culture I live in. But see, what Jesus is doing here is he's actually drawing on the same principle. He's drawing on the same idea that God was building on in the Old Testament. And listen, Jesus is about setting goals. Jesus is about, you know, hitting marks and being effective and progressive. He's not against any of that. But what he's saying is when you're at the limit, when you're at the max, when you're at that point where your schedules and your relationship and financially, you are just fully maxed out, perhaps it's because you are afraid. Perhaps. And so here's what I want us to think about as we listen to this. I want you to step back and ask yourself this question. In the gap, in the space, in the margin, and am I actually capable of trusting Jesus to fill the gap? Can I actually do that? In that space. And so listen to these words. They're infuriating at times. I'm going to let you know. Here's what he says. He says, "So do not worry, man." I mean, it's like he's in Jamaica. "Do not worry." It's like he's hanging out on the beach somewhere. "Do not worry what shall we eat or what shall we drink or what shall we wear." He says, for the pagans. Now, pagans, this is like a slap in the face right here. See, a pagan, we think of as a pagan as somebody who doesn't believe in God. No, pagans believe in God. Pagans believe in a God. They just believe in the wrong God. They believe in like the God of Jupiter, the God of Zeus. They believe that, you know, they got to get the God's attentions up here. What they don't believe is that there's actually a God who cares for them and that will take care of them. So he says, for the pagans run after these things. And I think he says something here that's the issue for you and me. The issue that every time we tense up, we're like, "Oh, man, what if I don't, you know, work the extra hour? Somebody's going to pass me by." Every time we tense up and say, "Man, what if I don't have my kids in every activity that they possibly can be in? What if they don't get the scholarship because I missed one activity for them?" Every time we tense up and say, what if, I think this is what Jesus is getting at right here. For the pagans run after these things, and here's the kicker right here. And your Heavenly Father, He knows. He knows that you need them. Your Heavenly Father knows that your kids, you want your kids to be all they can be. Your Heavenly Father knows your kids need to go to school, that they need to get into college. He knows that you'd prefer to sleep and eat indoors as opposed to in the elements. You like a house over your, He knows that. He knows that. I mean, just think about this for a moment. What if you and I really lived like we believed that God knew what we needed? I mean, what would our lives look like? What happened to our fear if we actually believed God when He says, "Hey, I know what you need"? I mean, if every morning we could wake up and just say, "God, you know, I know what my limits are today. I know there's going to be some fruit left on the vine. I know there's going to be some sales leads left out in the field. I know my limits. I know where they are, and I know there's some things that just aren't going to get done this week, and I know, and I can say, "Oh, man, what if I don't get this sale or that lead? What if I just say, God, I know those are going to be left, and I'm going to trust that you know exactly what I need. As long as I'm on it when I'm working, and I draw the line, and I'm done, when I say I'm done, I'm done. I'm going to trust you to fill in the gap, because you know what I need." See, then he ends this passage this way. It's one of the most famous verses in the Bible. He says, "But seek first something else." He says, "Seek first. There's something else I want you to seek first." He says, "But seek first His kingdom and His righteousness, and all of these things will be given to you as well." Now, here's what I know about you as we wrap up. Here's what I know about every single one of us. What I know is that something or someone is going to determine the limits you live by. Something's going to determine that. It's going to be the culture saying, "Man, if you don't have your kid in every HSC sports program, as great as sports is, if you don't have your kid maxed out in their schedule, they're not going to get a scholarship." I mean, you can let that set your limits. You can, you know, let your employer say, "Hey, I need more. I need 20 more hours a week on top of the full work week you're already working." You can let those things set your limits. I mean, we can either let something or someone set our limits, or we can say, "You know, I know what my limits are. And God, I'm also going to trust that when I begin to walk by your pace, that you're actually going to provide for my needs. You're actually going to provide, even though it doesn't make sense to me how it's all going to get done. If I'm on it when I'm working and I actually take time to go, I'm going to trust that you are going to be true to your word." And some of you can argue with, you're going to argue with me this week. You're going to be like, "Oh, man, you just don't understand. I'm going to get an email this week. You don't understand my end. You don't understand my boss. You don't understand my life." You know, listen. I don't have people calling me up every week saying, "Man, Kurt, could I get an hour with you just to tell you how great my life is?" I don't have that conversation. All right, I wish I would. Somebody said they're going to call me this week, you know, just to have that conversation. You know, I'm in the ministry. I don't talk to people that are doing great. All right, people call me when they're doing bad. All right, so, you know, somebody's going to set your limits. But here's what I know. Here's what I know. I know there are men, because I've talked to many of them, men who didn't have time to invest in their marriage until she left. Then they spent hours upon hours upon hours trying to rescue and save their marriage. And if one of those men was sitting right here, you know what he'd tell you? He'd say, I wish the hours and hours and hours I had to spend on the back end trying to restore what I didn't invest in, I wish I would have taken a little more time and invested that on the front end. I'm trying to rescue something and it's almost gone from me. That's what they'd say. It took a crisis to get my attention. Over the years, I've talked to too many moms and dads, way too many moms and dads who were way too busy. And, you know, they love their kids. They were trying to provide for their kids, trying to give their kids the best possible education and school and sports experience and all-around life experience. And yet, they had no relationship with their kids. They're just kind of a connector, connecting them to one thing and to the next and taking them one place to the next. And then all of a sudden, one of their kids spins out of control. And they spend hours and hours and hours and lots of money trying to rescue someone they genuinely love. Genuinely love. But their schedule, it looked like this. Their kid's schedule looked like this right here. And if they were here today, sitting in this seat right here, you know what they'd tell you? They'd say, man, I wish the hours and hours and hours that I spent all the money that I spent trying to rescue my son, rescue my daughter. I mean, I love them deeply. I wish I would have made the hard call. And it's hard. I mean, I didn't think I had anything to give or to create a little space for them, but I wish I would have made a little more space and done the investment on the front end instead of having to rescue someone on the back end. And I've talked to many, you know, 60, 70-year-old men, women, who've said it in different forms. Man, if I could go back to my 30s and 40s, they'd say, young man, if I could go back to your age, here's what I'd tell you. Your 20s. I would trade a lot of the at least a decent degree of the progress and of the and of the pressing and of the of the sense of being successful. I'd trade a significant amount of that for the sake of a little more peace. I just looking back, it's not worth it. It's not worth it. There's nothing wrong with progress, nothing wrong with pushing, nothing hard with getting after it. But all the places where I went above and beyond at the cost of something else, I'd trade that for the sake of a little more margin, a little more enjoyment, a little more living, actually enjoying all the things I've put around my family, actually enjoying the toys that I've given my family that I don't have any time to use. I would have created more space. And so for the next few weeks, we're going to take a look at what this looks like for our schedule. We're going to take a look at what it means to create margin with our money. We're not going to be asking for any of it. I mean, that's a teaching for another time. We're going to be talking about what it means to create margin financially and then what it means to create margin when it comes to our relationships. And every relationship isn't just about being efficient and getting the job done, but I can actually have space and time to connect. And so here's your homework assignment. I want you to take out your connection card, and on the back, every week we do next steps, and on the back is the next step, and there's one question that you have for homework this week, and the question is, where do I need some margin? And for some of you, you've already figured it out. You don't have to think long about this. You can just write it down. I want you to write that down. I'm interested in seeing where our margin points are. But I also want you to write this on your weekly, on the notes page. Take it with you. And most of you have already done your homework. And this, you know, if there's somebody that's going, man, I don't know, Kurt. I really don't know where I need margin. Listen, you should have been up here teaching this, all right? Because you haven't figured out. I would venture to say every single one of us has a place where we say, I need some margin. And the first step to making a change is actually identifying where it is. So take a moment and write that down. All right, God, I thank you that we can come into a place like this. You know, there are not many places, there's not many employers that say, you know, you need to take more time off. There's not many places in our society, you know, when we're signing our kids up for activities that say, man, are you sure you want to put them in all of this stuff? God, we're actually treading on some dangerous places today because, you know, we battle this constant tension of, man, what if my kid doesn't do enough? What price are they going to pay? They're actually paying a price right now. God, for some of our lives, it looks more like this closet right here, our schedules, our relationships, our activity. Our kids' lives are being shaped in a way that causes them to just immediately connect that my busyness has something to do with my worth. And so God, I'm just going to ask right now that we would actually begin this process right now.
God, that this is this band that's around our wrists, that it would serve as a reminder. It would serve as something that's bound on our wrists through these next 4 weeks that reminds us that your dream for us, that you would actually invite us to live more instead of live less, that that's actually the kind of life you've designed us for. God, I'm just going to pray that even right in these moments, as we sing, as we rest under these words, God, that you would even in these moments begin to